Hey, this is Kyle Clark. You're listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News and streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. There are some discouraging setbacks in the fight against the Aspen Acres fire in southern Colorado. Dry, windy conditions pushed that fire quickly, and it's brought the burn area close to 100,000 acres. Communities to the west of the fire, like the town of Rye, are still under an evacuation till firefighters can get a line that holds. There will likely be many lawsuits filed over the fire. The first, filed today, claims that a local power company is partly to blame. The attorney who filed the lawsuit against the San Isabel Electric also filed the first Marshall fire lawsuit against Xcel. And our Marshall Zellinger found copy-paste mistakes.
The first lawsuit related to the Aspen Acres fire shows a photo of flames near power lines. Four residents are suing San Isabel Electric Association, saying power lines and energy utility equipment were a substantial factor in the fire. It's the exact same language from the Marshall Fire lawsuit against Xcel, from the same law firm, and it's not the only copy and paste. To our surprise, the lawsuit against San Isabel Electric said dozens were injured and at least one man lost his life while fleeing from the fire. None of that is true. It's a sloppy copy-paste from the Marshall Fire lawsuit. The attorney confirmed it was a mistake and should not be in the lawsuit about the Aspen Acres fire. The errors continue. The San Isabel Electric lawsuit references power lines adjacent to Highway 93 near Aspen Acres Road in Pueblo. Except Highway 93 is in Boulder County, where the Marshall fire happened. And then paragraph 28 uses December 30th, 2021 to reference the Aspen Acres fire. Again, that's the Marshall fire. The attorney told me over the phone an amended complaint, meaning re-edited, would be filed with the court. For Next, I'm Marshall Zellinger.
So this is just the start of a long process. Any lawsuit over the Aspen Acres fire is likely going to take years to play out. Xcel was named in several lawsuits over the Marshall fire in 2021, and it's taken nearly 5 years to settle all of those claims. ICE now admits that a detainee at the Aurora Detention Facility had tuberculosis late last month, but ICE says that person has since been treated and deported. ICE has been stonewalling state and local public health investigators who want to get inside the facility to determine if the tuberculosis spread. The Adams County Health Department says state law requires them to do contact tracing and testing. Earlier this week, an ICE spokesperson told us there was not an active case as of Tuesday. In a follow-up today, ICE told us there was, in fact, a case on June 25th, but they said that that detainee was, quote, treated, cleared, and removed from the country. The county health department insists it can't do its job without getting inside the facility to check people out. The state health department has ordered the private prison contractor in charge to let them in by tomorrow. A judge in Fremont County reduced first-degree murder charges against a defendant this week because the DA's office couldn't follow the rules. If that sounds familiar, it's because this same DA's office has had similar sanctions in the past. Here's Mark Salinger.
Of all the courthouses in Colorado, this one in Fremont County keeps bringing us back for the same reason.
This was an extraordinary penalty against Jeff Lindsay and the DA's office.
This week, a judge here in Canyon City reduced a first-degree murder charge against a defendant and disqualified the entire DA's office from the homicide case. The reason? The judge found a pattern of violations and misconduct by the very prosecutors in charge of enforcing the law.
The court found that he and his office lacked candor to the court, meaning dishonest, untruthful, and couldn't be trusted.
And it's not the first time the DA's office here has faced sanctions from judges related to their conduct prosecuting cases. In 2024, the last elected DA to hold this office, Linda Stanley, was disbarred for ethical violations.
These are rare judicial sanctions, but they're not solving the underlying problem, the systemic problem, that this culture problem that is happening.
Iris Eton is an attorney who spent countless hours inside this courthouse. She represented Barry Morphew, the man who was charged with killing his wife, Suzanne. The case was marred by ethical breaches by then DA Stanley. Eventually, charges against Morphew were dropped in 2022, days before he was set to go to trial here, but were then refiled years later by a different district attorney in a new district. That case is ongoing.
Prosecutors are above the law. That's end of story.
Eaton filed a complaint about Jeff Lindsay with the Attorney Regulation Council. She also started an organization called Protect Ethical Prosecutors, alleging district attorneys have too much unchecked power. She spoke out about it after the Morphew case. Now she's doing it again after a similar pattern of violations from the same DA's office in the same courthouse, now under a new district attorney.
Prosecutors aren't held accountable, truly, for the damage and abuse they cause to people.
District Attorney Jeff Lindsay declined to do an interview with me today, but sent me a statement. His office says they respect the authority of the court and will comply with the directives moving them off the case. Special prosecutor will now come in to handle the murder trial. He told me he was only involved peripherally on this case and the discovery violations were made against a different prosecutor. Again, Kyle, he is the head of the DA's office.
Can we go back to the old infamous prosecutor there, Linda Stanley? Well, she got involuntarily retired, so she got more time to pursue her passions, like acting unethically. What's she doing these days?
Well, as far as we know, she's the first DA, elected DA in Colorado to ever be disbarred. We don't know exactly what she's doing right now, but the last time that we heard from her, there was the county commissioners in Fremont County trying to get a bunch of money back because she used public funds to defend herself in front of the Supreme Court for those ethics violations. Not 100% sure if she's paid those back yet.
They were not fans of that approach. Mark Salinger, thank you very much. Meteorologist Chris Bianchi is along bringing glad tidings of rain somewhere within the four corners of Colorado.
Oh, tons of it, Kyle, and a lot of areas that really need it. Some beneficial widespread showers. Salida, in some cases here, already picking up over an inch of rain in Como and Fairplay and South Park, as well as down here through the Arkansas River Basin. Still a little flash flood warning for the south side of Salida down through Poncha Springs right now as well. And then southwest Colorado seeing some of that beneficial rain around the area of the Ferris Fire as well. 7-day forecast. Denver will stay dry tonight. It'll stay dry through the weekend. Next week, we get some showers and storms and some really hot temperatures on Sunday. Potential weather impact alert for that. Now, if you'll allow me here, folks, I have a little vent that I would like to get off of my chest in front of this television screen. So a lot of you like to send me your car thermometer photos. This is a very, very popular thing, particularly on social media, but on email as well, saying, Chris, look at my car. It says it was 155 billion degrees today. Here's the problem with car thermometers. They're located near the front grille of the car, which is really close to pavement, which is really inaccurate when it comes to car thermometer readings. So point being, if it's saying that it's the surface of the sun on your car thermometer, ignore it, especially on hot, sunny days. Slow-moving traffic, unfortunately, also adds extra temperatures because you're getting the exhaust. But let's say you've got a photo that you really, really want to share. You just can't help yourself. You've got to get rid of this car thermometer photo. Kyle, K-Y-L-E, dot C-L-A-R-K, at 9news.com. Kyle.
Yep. No, that's very fair. I'll route those directly into the same folder that receives the patio snow folders, right? Got that little rule in the inbox.
Oh, you don't like those. I wasn't aware.
No. That hasn't come up in our conversations. You would think we would have talked about it, you know, as friends. All right, Chris Bianchi, thank you. President Trump is expected to address the nation tonight with more election rigging conspiracy theories. First, though, my in-depth conversation with some elections officials from across America on how they fight misinformation.
Look, there's nothing to hide here. You can see everything that I have. Judge for yourself.
And Denver's most depressing bridge is one step closer to being loved again. That's next. President Trump is giving an address to the nation tonight where he is expected to repeat his false claims about election rigging. Trump has retaliated against the state of Colorado for its use of mail-in voting, which Trump claims, without evidence, is rigged. MS Now reports that Tina Peters will be in Washington for tonight's speech. We reached out to her, didn't hear back. She's the convicted former elections clerk from Mesa County who helped fellow election conspiracy theorists get inside Colorado's voting systems. Peters was recently freed early by Democratic Governor Jared Polis. While it is not clear which flavor of election conspiracy theories Trump will be serving up tonight, Colorado sits at the center of several of them, including the wild claim that the Venezuelan government somehow worked with Denver-based Dominion Voting Systems to rig the 2020 election against Trump. America's election officials recently gathered in Washington, D.C. for an event with the Center for Election Innovation and Research. There, I moderated a conversation among four elections officials, all Republicans, who are pushing back on false claims of election rigging. Matt Crane, you'll know him as the head of Colorado's County Clerks Association. Trent Triple, the clerk in Ada County, Idaho. Wendy Sartori-Link, supervisor of elections in Palm Beach County, Florida, where President Trump lives. And Seth Bluestein, who oversees elections in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I asked them, why stay in the field of elections while it's under assault?
I think it's a fair question. It's one that a lot of us have probably thought about who went through that experience. And the answer was pretty straightforward. Somebody has to.
Trent, what led you into this low stress, low strain, low pressure environment?
Well, I needed to downgrade my stress levels. For 20 years, I was a fighter pilot in the Air Force and thought I'd do something a lot more relaxing. And so, and as a fighter pilot, you shoot straight and speak the truth. And I wanted our community to know what was going on and that they could trust elections. So I felt like this was a good space for me.
Yeah, just like I'm sure everybody here, the people in my office could all make more money doing something else. And they stay, or even the same thing they're doing someplace else, and they stay because they believe in what we're doing.
It's an incredibly rewarding career, but for those of us, and I know election officials, you guys know this, this is truly a passion for us to do. You know, what this work means in the fabric of our country, you know, people have fought and died for this, right?
Wendy, single largest challenge that you face?
I think for us still it is the disinformation and misinformation, and that seeps into so many different things. It's what the voters hear, it's what the poll workers worry about, it's also, you know, it gets into the legislature. So the legislators are just voters and citizens just like us, and they're hearing this misinformation and disinformation and then taking that to the legislature and creating bills and laws that may not make sense or may not be necessary or maybe tackling a problem that doesn't exist or in fact making it worse. And so we then have to deal with that. So I think it's a lot of, again, just the misinformation that you have a handful of people really wanting to spread, and it just sows doubt into so much.
And any one of your residents more than others, or just a whole bunch of them?
Yeah, just a whole bunch of them. Yeah, I think that there's certainly, I think they have a louder mouthpiece than they might have in other counties, just because of who lives near us.
Sure. Trent, biggest challenge you face in Ada County?
I think it stems a little bit what she just mentioned, legislators that are misguided in their laws. But the most frustrating thing for me is, on the dovetail of that, is that they say there's a problem, they want to fix it by passing these laws, but there's no funding associated with it. So they're always asking us to do more, to be better, to be more secure, more accurate, faster, but they don't provide any funding to do any of that stuff, which I'd be okay with. I'm okay with being faster, more accurate, and all of those things, but I can't do it with no funding. And so that's probably one of our biggest challenges.
How do you make the decision of when and how to engage with not just skeptics, but bad faith critics? Seth?
Yeah, so it depends in part on how large their platform is, right? So if some random account with no followers says something that's totally incorrect, you know, you have to measure whether engaging with that will then elevate it in a way that's unhelpful. But when it's the President of the United States or the owner of Twitter, then it's probably worth responding to.
How do you defend your work without being defensive?
It's a fine line, especially with my background. I want to punch him in the face. but I engage with all of them on certain terms. I won't get into chat rooms. I won't start putting out defensive press releases. I'll call them personally and say, hey, can we have a conversation? What is it that concerns you? What is it that I have that I can give you that will help you understand what we're doing? It's just a very civil conversation.
As a journalist, I'll often engage with trolls online, and I think it's a great way to get to know these folks before they run for office. Which, every time I say that, people laugh as if it's a joke.
Well, we have them on our ballot right saying, now, so
it's not a joke. No, they absolutely do get elected, and then you have to respond when they come forward as an elected official. Matt, what's your line for what level of oxygen or attention you're willing to give to bad faith criticism?
Every now and again, there is somebody who does get elevated or elevates themselves into the public square. We try to take the higher road and just go to the claim. But every now and again, you know, you have to get your hands dirty and get in the mud a little bit, which we're fine to do sometimes, too.
If you'd like to see our full 90-minute conversation on American elections and misinformation, you can find a link on the next page of 9news.com.
We've been calling it an orphan bridge for 5 years, and now I think it's becoming a foster bridge.
It is the saddest, loneliest bridge in Denver, but it could have a future so long as neighbors are willing to help. Denver's Delgany Bridge has seen better days. Its wood deck is rotting out. Nobody will admit to owning the thing or being responsible for it. That pedestrian bridge over the Cherry Creek Trail near Lodo has been closed for 5 years, abandoned by its owners and the city. Our Steve Steger was very sad about the bridge for a couple of years. Well, now our Spencer Soischer has good news for Steve and everyone else worried about Denver's loneliest bridge.
Don't know why I can't let go.
Hi, I'm Steve Steger. Will you be an angel for a helpless bridge? Please call the number on your screen now.
In those sad, late-night injured animal infomercials, you never hear how the story ends. That's not how we do it on Next.
I don't actually know what's happening with it.
Just like this lonely bird below it, Denver's Delgany Bridge has been an orphan, sitting over some of the city's brownest water, waiting. And waiting for its moment.
We've been calling it an orphan bridge for 5 years, and now I think it's becoming a foster bridge.
Brenda Roy is now a bridge foster mom. She's formed an LLC to gain ownership of the bridge over the Cherry Creek Trail, which has been closed for 5 years, ever since rotting wood collapsed under someone's foot while they were crossing. Nobody claimed ownership of the bridge, and nobody would make repairs.
In order to restore the bridge, somebody has to own the bridge. If there's no owner, you can't get insurance, you can't pull permits, you can't write contracts.
Denver City Council just signed off on a deal. Brenda's group, Delgany Bridge Restoration, Inc., needs to raise $750K and restore the bridge. Once they do it, Denver says it will inspect it, take it back, and maintain it.
It just needed somebody to step up.
That's Brenda. She lives not that far away and loves history.
I raised my hand for this. I had no idea that it would take this long, no idea how interesting it would be.
Unlike this very sad bird, this bridge may soon have a family before it has another family.
My husband and I, you know, you talk about extra property, but an old railroad bridge is not really in our retirement plan.
I watched that bird for like a half hour. It never moved. It's still there 3 hours later. Brenda said they've raised somewhere between 150 and 200K of the 750K they need to raise. 2023, the city estimated it would take $3 million to fix. Now they have an owner.
Yep. But Spencer, watching it like a hawk or whatever that bird was. Back with your feedback next. Feedback on meteorologist Chris Bianchi's rant about why the car thermometers always give you incorrectly hot temperatures. Mark writes, if the car thermometer at the front grille isn't terribly accurate, would be better placed at the rear bumper. This measurement gives better with humans. It took me a beat, but that is actually one of the greatest pieces of feedback we have ever received on Next. Carolyn in Golden writes in about our extended conversation with elections officials. Thank you for the convo on American elections. So informative, brings great, great clarity. If you love that nerd stuff, whole conversations on our page.
Thanks for listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News. Streaming live, same time, on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. Next producer is Mallory Harris. Our digital producer is Marilyn Moore. Our visual editor is Jeff Sartell. Our reporters include Marshall Zellinger, Mark Salinger, Angeline McCall, and Evan Kruel. Misty Montano is 9 News' digital director. I'm Kyle Clark. I'll see you next time.